I knew this plane was going down. That it, and it wasn't because there were flames coming out of its jets, but it was the way it was banking around and the way it was descending so quickly.
155 people, a flock of birds, a pilot, and a co-pilot. How does it all end? Miraculously, with a flight full of survivors. Now that's a story. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Friday, January 16th. I'm Adora Udoji. John Hockenberry is away, and Todd Zwillick is here with us. Good morning, Todd. Good
morning, Adora. President-elect Barack Obama now has a new pile of money and a plan to get more. We'll have a conversation on his ideas on how to fix the economy. We'll talk to someone in the midst of the Mideast conflict on whether new developments could lead to a Gaza ceasefire. Those stories and more coming up, but first, Femi Okeh is here with your top headlines.
Good morning, all. The people on board the U.S. Airways flight that Adora was just talking about are shaken, tired, and recovering from mostly minor injuries. But all 155 got off alive. Beth McHugh was one of them.
It is indeed a miracle that nobody was severely injured. That pilot has to be commended. He steered that plane so well, and I just can't believe how well he did. We're all alive because of him.
The flight is now under investigation, and just before putting the plane down in the Hudson River, the pilot said that both engines died after hitting birds. The pilot, crew, and rescuers are all getting high praise this morning. After weeks of fighting and diplomatic frustrations, there are signs this morning that a ceasefire is closer. Israel's foreign minister is traveling to Washington, where she's expected to take final steps toward a ceasefire agreement. President Bush will soon hand the Middle East and a raft of other tough problems over to President-elect Barack Obama in a primetime farewell speech. He hailed his successor and wished him well.
Standing on the steps of the Capitol will be a man whose history reflects the enduring promise of our land. This is a moment of hope and pride for our whole nation. And I join all Americans in offering best wishes to President-elect Obama.
President Bush will spend his final weekend as president at Camp David. The next president has a new arrow in his quiver. That's thanks to Congress. Lawmakers have approved releasing the remaining $350 billion in bailout funds. And among the economic news we're watching this morning, key reports on the Consumer Price Index, production and consumer sentiment. Adora.
Thanks very much, Femi. Also yesterday on Wall Street, the Dow and the S&P were both up, but just a bit. The Dow closed at 8212 and the S&P finished at 843. As we mentioned, the 155 people who miraculously escaped yesterday are waking up feeling pretty good. And that made us wonder, do you have a story where you survived something miraculously? Did you think you were going to lose your job, but instead got a promotion, get evicted, then find your dream home, break up, and then meet your life partner the same day? We want to hear your stories of modern-day miracles. 8778-MY-TAKE.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. Today, President-elect Barack Obama can start making plans on how to spend the second half of the $700 billion bailout plan he's been lobbying for. The Senate agreed to release it, but with conditions. Todd Zwillick, reporter from Capital News Connection, joins us this morning. He's here in the studio, and he'll be with us for the hour. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
So Obama, he gets the $350 billion, but what are the conditions?
Well, Republicans especially were gunning for these conditions in the Senate. What they are, essentially the big one is, I agree to spend this money on the financial markets and the housing markets. No extraneous bailouts, no more auto bailouts, no industrial policy being made in the TARP fund. So no bailouts for motorcycle makers or anyone else. This is for the financial institutions and housing. Another one of the conditions is that the White House will insist that any financial institution that receives this money has to put some of the money towards what's called foreclosure mitigation. What that means is helping people stay in their homes.
Which was something that Democrats were really pushing in Congress.
They were really upset when it didn't happen in the first half. A lot of Republicans were upset about that, too. And then the other big thing is banks that get the money have to use the money for foreclosure mitigation, and also money goes directly from the TARP fund up to $100 billion directly to help for homeowners, helping people stay in their homes, covering foreclosed mortgages, things like that.
How is it that the Senate could approve releasing this money? Did the House or does the House have any role?
They do, but do you remember the concept of a double negative in school? That's what this was. It was a double negative. The Senate voted on a resolution to reject the funds. So had they voted yes, the funds would have been rejected. But they voted it down. That means it passes. Both houses of Congress have to approve it, and the president would have had to sign it. So the fact that
we're going to get into the minutiae there of how things work in Washington, but the Barack Obama administration, when they go to work on Wednesday, they'll have this money to spend. And of course, at the same time, they are still building the stimulus package, which we understand is at a $825 billion point.
That's exactly right, and that's the next step. Well, on the stimulus, and it's a big deal, I want to turn to the New York Times' David Hersenhorn, who's my colleague on Capitol Hill and my pal. David, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Todd?
I'm very well. How are you this morning?
Good.
Well, David, $825 billion. Barack Obama lobbied really hard to get the plan on paper, and now he's got it, at least in the House. Did he get everything he wanted from his fellow Democrats in the House?
He's gotten a lot, but the short answer is we still don't know. In fact, I just got email from a reader of the New York Times who's been building a spreadsheet coming through that bill, and certainly some of us have been doing the same thing. And you know, it's pretty hard to count up to $825 billion, so we're still working on it. But the signature component for Mr. Obama, we would think, is the what he's calling the making work pay tax cut. That's actually a promise that he made on the campaign trail to deliver middle-class tax relief, under which individuals would get up to $500, married couples, families up to $1,000. And there'll be some debate about that, because although it does keep his campaign promise, even some liberal economists say that it may not be the best long-term way to do tax policy, that it's still a little bit gimmicky. You might actually prefer to somehow reduce the tax rates at the lowest end of the spectrum and deliver longer-term, more lasting tax relief to the folks who need it most.
So there's the big middle-class tax cut there, but one big question that was asked in the campaign and still gets asked around the halls of Congress is, who is middle class? Who qualifies as middle class? And this tax cut is sort of going to define who's middle class. So who are they? How much do you have to make, or how little do you have to make to be middle class?
Well, the benchmark has been that it would completely phase out for anyone making $200,000 or more, or any family making $200,000 or more. But again, these are the fine points that will be debated. There will be a phase out, right? So that $1,000 per family credit will drop as income rises, probably over above $150,000. And again, the Senate's working on its own version of the stimulus plan. And already you hear different numbers on the Senate side than we've heard in the House. So it's going to be a fun couple of weeks as the details get hashed out.
And there certainly are a lot of details, David. And there is this goal of getting this legislation to President Obama by February 13th. Is that looking more or less likely, or is it just too much to go through before they'll know if they get to that date?
Well, to the extent that Congress can ever be, you know, on track and on schedule, they seem to be in this case. The Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, has said if they don't have a bill passed by the President's Day recess, there will be no President's Day recess. A big lift, obviously, from yesterday's approval by the Senate, or disapproval of the disapproval, as Todd explained it, for the TARP funds. If that had become a long, drawn-out legislative fight where Barack Obama was potentially vetoing a disapproval motion in his first week in office, the stimulus certainly could have been pushed back. The really interesting thing there is a lot of the conditions that Todd was describing that the Obama administration agreed to were intended to shore up Democratic votes. And so there were Republicans, including the leader, Mitch McConnell, who went to the floor and made clear some of those assurances cost Republican support because they might have released the money without some of what the new White House says it's going to do.
And in the House next week, David, I understand that they're going to they're going to vote to reject the TARP funds anyway, even though it's quite irrelevant. Why are they doing that? Why is Nancy Pelosi holding that vote?
It's really a question of, you know, this has been so unpopular. There have been so many folks who you know, have been upset at the way this program has been mismanaged by the Bush administration that there are lawmakers who just want to get their vote on record.
So that if we get 2 years down the line and the diagnosis is that the TARP miserably failed, they can say, hey, look, I voted against it.
I would have blocked it. That's right. I mean, it is a moot point, as you described. To block this money, both the House and the Senate would have had to disapprove it. The Senate has said, let the money flow. But, you know, part of this goes back to the Democrats' own success in this past election, where Chuck Schumer, who led the Democratic Senatorial Committee, had many of his candidates running ads, you know, smashing and bashing their opponents over the original bailout fund. And so it's not surprising that having seen people get beat up so badly for supporting this program and now not having a Republican White House to back up, that there are a number of Republicans who are saying, you know, this just doesn't fit with our principles of how economics ought to work, and we're not going to back it. And because it's what's called a privileged motion, they can insist on the vote even though it won't really matter, other than, as you said, for their own, you know, for their own boasting down the line.
Yeah, I was thinking of the 30-second campaign commercials just the same. if this thing fails, you know, here we are, we just had an election, and we're headed for people already worrying about what the next campaign commercials are going to look like if they vote for something that's too unpopular.
And maybe one of the more remarkable things about the Senate vote last night was how all but one of the Democratic freshmen voted in favor of releasing this money, some of whom, including the Senators Udall, the cousin senators from New Mexico and Colorado, who had opposed it in the fall, supported it in part largely because of personal entreaties by the president-elect, who really threw himself into this. So it's
is this a symbol of Barack Obama's persuasion abilities, or is this a win for the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid?
It's a little bit of both. I think it would have been a much bigger defeat had this gone down, a much bigger complication. You know, at this point, there's pretty general agreement that the credit markets are fragile, right? We hear new news of trouble at Bank of America and Citigroup planning to break itself apart. So nobody was disputing, even Bob Corker, who was, you know, a big player in trying to get this auto bailout done and was very angry that the bailout money got used for the auto industry, says, look, I'm a guy who knows and will tell you the credit markets are in trouble. We really need to stabilize these banks. This is very necessary. But, you know, I just don't like the fact that there are no assurances for how this money is going to be used. So, you know, it's a victory. Certainly the Obama administration is portraying it as a big victory. And if you consider that they're not even in office, that, you know, he had to push for this without having all the official trappings. You know, he's not sitting in the Oval Office yet. They really worked it hard, you know, multiple visits up to Capitol Hill, lots of phone calls trying to make sure that this would be in place so they can respond if there's some unexpected disaster in the banking sector.
So what's the next step on the stimulus?
On the stimulus, well, the House Appropriations Committee will start working in detail on the bill next week. also, Republicans, remember, the president-elect has promised a bipartisan effort here. And what we saw yesterday was really the Democratic draft, the Democratic proposal. Republicans quickly pointed out that this was not, you know, the package that included their ideas. They have ideas. They want to share them. The president-elect's agreed to hear them. So I think we'll see the Republicans begin to march out a lot of what they're pushing for, including broader and deeper tax cuts, but potentially an array of measures that would be different than what we've seen so far. And then the following week...
Right, and then it just goes on and it goes on, and we'll see what happens up to February 13th. David Herzenhorn, thanks for joining us.
Sure, great to be with you guys.
See you in the scrum, David.
See you in the scrum. David Herzenhorn is a New York Times reporter, and he was coming to us from Washington, D.C.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.